And welcome back to Keep Calm and Mental Health On. I'm your host, Aditi, and I'm so excited for today's episode because we have a guest who is passionate for advocating for mental health and who has dedicated her career to advocating for BIPOC youth specifically. And before we dive in, Christine, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and share a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Aditi. So I'm Christine. I am a pretty new face in the mental health world. My experience is mainly in foster care and in residential group homes. Currently, I'm working with wraparound services, which is part of the social services team, or it's an extension of it, but yeah, I will tell you more about it later.
And yeah, so to start us off, what's one grounding practice that you like to do when you're having a mentally heavy day and you just need to unwind and relax?
One of my favorite grounding techniques is something called floor time. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Okay, it's basically where you just lay down on the floor and you just connect with the ground. It's quite literally grounding. And for me, it's really fun because, well, I feel like my body just relaxes when I do that. But also, it's a way for me to connect with my inner child because a lot of the time I end up just like taking out my coloring book, coloring while I'm on the floor. And it's such an effective way for me to tune in. So I would recommend if someone hasn't tried it before.
I'll definitely be trying that. And I also noticed that you have a unique background in psychology and education. So, what led you to combine both of those paths, and how has that shaped your advocacy in mental health?
So my journey into studying psychology and education were shaped by live experience. For my education, I kind of owe that experience to my sister because we used to, well, I'm an older sister, and we used to play classroom a lot. And I was like, you know, I'm pretty good at what I do. I'm a good teacher or whatever. And I also had a strong desire to make the learning experience better for other people. I'm sure you've experienced, like, you know, teachers who can be really impatient or expect a little too much. So I think the advocacy part came into play pretty early on. And then for psychology, I went through a really hard time throughout middle school and high school. And I was very lucky to have a positive experience in my first like taste of mental health treatment. And from there, I was like, well, I like learning about people and knowing why they do what they do. It's always brought me fulfillment. And so when I went into school, I was like, let me just combine the two because they are kind of related. Like, if you want to become like a therapist, for example, you're gonna need to know how to teach people anyway and like listen to their needs and learn what kind of ways they're most receptive to learning. But as far as how it's shaped my advocacy in mental health, I would say witnessing a lot of cracks in the system has made me a very fiery person when it comes to approaching these fields. And especially when I have the experiences of youth that they tell me, like I've, you know, it just makes me so fired up. So I just really love what I do now.
Wow,
Hope
that
that answers your
sounds so
question.
amazing. Yeah. And so you currently work at with at-risk youth and families through wraparound services, like you briefly mentioned. So can you explain what that looks like on a day-to-day basis and how that experience has helped you grow into an advocate?
So if anyone doesn't know what wraparound services are, we're basically a team and strength based service. So our approach is to center the family and just kind of surround them with so many resources like our team, like county services. We work with social service wor or social workers, sorry. We work with probation officers, teachers, therapists, all kinds of people to help support the child. And our goal is to stabilize the families. so that they can move through systems such as like foster care and probation. And what I do on a day-to-day basis, basically my role now is I'm a care coordinator. So I check in with families every month to see how they're doing, what kind of resources do they need, and I work with my team to help provide interventions that are unique to each kid and each, like, not just kid, but also like the parents, their siblings. So it's pretty awesome. It's very holistic. And then how it's helped me to grow as an advocate. I'm seeing a very different lens of treatment through this work, because like I mentioned before, I used to work in like group homes, and most of my clients were strictly just like the teenagers or like the younger kids. So I hardly got to see the parents. And I don't know, like coming into this and seeing like an actual, like a bigger system at work, like a family or a school, has just been super awesome. And I'm really expanding the, like my knowledge, I guess, on what I can provide to other demographics.
Wow, you must hear from, so many different people and their diverse stories. So, was there one specific moment in your advocacy that really stayed with you and like has really shaped you so far?
Had this experience with a foster youth back when I was in one of the group homes that I worked with. And a lot of people come into the just a situation with youth assuming that they're going to be resistant to things or they're going to throw an attitude and stuff like that. And basically, what happened was that this child was labeled as treatment resistant and that he doesn't want to talk to anybody, don't even try, stuff like that. So naturally, I was like, okay, let me try because I'm pretty curious. Like to describe the kid, like all they did was listen to music. I didn't even know what they were listening to because they always had earphones on. They would just be dancing, rapping in silence. And I, this is gonna be a really long-winded way of saying that like things went well, but basically I really leaned into that kid's like mystery, like who are you? Why are people, not able to support you in the way that you need. And so the way we bonded was by me dancing with him while he was just like rapping in silence. And then eventually he let me into his music, shared his earphones. We started using that as like a coping skill. I was like, okay, like when you're angry, let's go to your room, let's listen to music together, let's calm down. And I really tried to, I tried to advocate for him in the sense of empowering him to use his tools so that people can see that, yeah, he's really trying. Like, and ultimately, what that led to was him being stepped down into a lower level of care. So he was able to get out of that group home, get down to like a position where he was with foster parents. So stories like that make me just really happy and. I feel so fulfilled knowing that the stuff I do can help empower kids to move through life in their own way.
Wow, that sounds so amazing. And
Yeah.
how have these things helped you learn more about your own mental health journey, like specifically from the experiences from the work that you do right now?
Okay, so one thing that I didn't really think about until I really stepped into working as a mental health provider was the importance of cultural considerations. So I used to be really focused on the concept of generational trauma. And ever since I started working with like foster kids and then later on like teens, now families, I've looked into a lot of factors that play into their dynamics, one of which, of course, is culture. And I realized, I was like, wow, like my upbringing as a kid, because I am Filipino American, and I learned a lot about why my upbringing was the way it was. And I think it's opened a lot of doors for self-compassion and also forgiveness. And empowerment too. Like seeing families, I think of my parents and my grandparents who didn't know a lot about mental health until I started naming what was going on with me. And this whole experience has just been a lesson in, I think the best way to put it is that people are just trying their best. And sometimes people just don't have the resources. And so that's part of why I care so deeply about mental health and spreading what I know.
Wow, yeah, that sounds really amazing. And so what are some of the specific like mental health challenges that you think are most misunderstood within marginalized communities, especially like BIPOC youth? Because I know that you work with so many different people. So what do you think are some of those challenges that are just understood, misunderstood by so many different people?
It's similar to my last answer, where sometimes the lack of resources can really lead people to misunderstand youth. Like for example, I don't know, like when I think of BIPOC youth, I think of a pattern of people kind of like shutting down or not wanting to share that they're going through a hard time. And sometimes I wish that like people who care for youth would just kind of listen. As I mentioned in the past, like it can be easy for people to assume a lot of things about, like let's say teens, for example. Like if a teen suddenly shuts down, one of the things I wish I knew sooner was that, hey, like actually they're shutting down because they're having a really tough time, and that the best way to reach our youth who sometimes feel so unattainable in a way is just to check in and be like, hey, like what's happening? I really care. Consistency also goes a long way when it comes to supporting youth, because trust is such a huge part of being able to be even open to receiving care. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it did. It even went
Yeah.
to my next question about how like you kind of like approach mental health to be like culturally affirming and safe. And then so we can just go to the next question.
Sure.
Like you talked about generational trauma, and I just want to talk about generational healing and kind
Yes.
of what that means to you and how it shows up with like the work that you do.
Okay. So I love the concept of generational healing now. Like I used to be so like, oh my God, generational trauma is the thing, blah, blah, blah. But generational healing has been such an empowering way of looking at the pain that people have gone through. It's such a beautiful thing. I think, when we look at things through a generational healing lens, it's an empowering way of helping people to move through difficult situations. Like, for example, as I'm working with families now, something that makes me really emotional is when I see parents like really, really trying to improve themselves or build awareness to what's going on and how they're contributing to situations, whether it's positive, negative, neutral, just to support their kids. I think like anything we do for ourselves contributes to the way that we impact other people in the future. Like when it comes to parents, like getting them, I don't know, into therapy or helping them to be more consistent with taking medications, things like that. That's going to help model, like, oh, hey, yeah, like self-care really matters. And children will see that, whether we vocalize it or not. And then when it comes to working with younger people, honestly, as a provider too, it heals me as well. Because when I see children not looking into their suffering and just being a kid sometimes, like that kid who just listened to a rap when he was just dancing and stuff like that, I was like, this is so healing to me because you're just being a kid. So healing can come in all ways. It doesn't always have to come from the parents. It would be great, but we can find pockets of it everywhere we go.
Wow, yeah. And like coming back to your, passion about education, what are some things that you feel like schools and educators should do to better support the mental health of students, especially in places where there are high-risk communities and marginalized youth.
You know what? One thing that I wish or would really want adults in these fields to model is being loud about mental health. Not just like, oh yeah, like here are the resources for you. Come to me whenever you need help. But like, hey, I went to therapy yesterday. Did you guys know that? This is what happened. It's really cool. I mean, like you have to share what happened, but it's like, this is what I learned. Just showing the humanness of, yeah, everyone goes through it. Or, hey, I'm also receiving services, by the way, or destigmatizing even things like medications. Like, oh yeah, like, oh my God, I missed my Lexapro this morning. So, I may be a little bit off today, just so everyone knows. It's up to the person, but just casually putting in pieces of yourself in conversations about mental health can really destigmatize conversations and conversation around that topic. And personally, I've started doing that too in my own circles and at work. I mean, within the right bounds. And you'd be surprised, I think, because sometimes people worry, like, oh, what will others think? But surprisingly, the main takeaway has been, oh, wow, you're really strong for being outspoken about this. Or, dang, I can't believe that you go to therapy. What's that like? So it opens up a lot of questions and safe spaces for people to ask from a safe individual, like another adult or a peer.
Yeah, it's almost like normalizing those conversations kind of like make you feel stronger and like the other people feel stronger about like reaching out to go and get mental health. So I guess what would be some like advice that you'd want to give to these adults who are unsure about how to tackle mental health in BIPOC communities and also like marginalized youth, just like in general, like what advice would you want to give them to kind of navigate the challenges with speaking out?
Well, one, it's important to acknowledge how hard it is to speak out. I think just validating that is going to be so important because it's really rough. We're still in a very tricky society where sometimes you don't really know how people are going to react. And also acknowledging how vulnerable it is going to be huge. But the nice thing about living in today's world is that a lot of the resources and possibly even like sources of empowerment that we need are actually behind our screens. So for example, with social media, I used to, or I had a really hard time during COVID with my mental health, and social media actually became one of like my cushions whenever I fell through my own like mental health issues. And I would definitely encourage people to lean on pages that provide support. Like, for example, may I mention a page that I really
Yeah, of
like?
course. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a page called, I believe it's the Asian Mental Health Project on Instagram. I really enjoy that because they cater to a lot of young adults and maybe older adults too. But they speak to a lot of lived experiences like queerness as an Asian person or just destigmatizing depression, talking about so many different lived experiences. And you see a lot of faces show up in these like support groups and you're like, oh wait, I'm not alone. And that in itself is so empowering. Like I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Kristen Neff, but she talks about self-compassion, which I think is one of the most empowering things that we can use in our toolkit. And one of the components of self-compassion is common humanity. So just knowing that we're genuinely not alone in what we're going through can be such a huge resource. But also, these pages also provide links to therapy or other affordable means of getting support.
Yeah, I'll make sure to put that page in the description. It sounds like it would really help a lot of people. And so I know that being around a lot of youth who feel like mental health is really important to who they are, but there are so many people who feel like they're unqualified to be able to start advocating in their environment. So how do you feel like you should get started by advocating for their own mental health, whether it be in school or in their families? Like, what do you think they should do? Because I know a lot of people feel like they are unqualified to start talking about mental health because they're not They haven't gotten the education to go through that, like a degree or something professional.
So, how can youth advocate for their own mental health? Dang, well, I can say you definitely don't need a degree for that. You're like, I could, like, your own experience is a strong enough evidence of your qualification. I really hope people will hear that and believe it because, shoot, like, the way people do research is by asking other people, hey, what has this been like? Believe in yourself first and always, like, I know it can be hard, especially as like a POC, to kind of speak up and be like, hey, yeah, I'm going through it. Sometimes parents will be like, what even is depression? Who is she? So it can be very tough. But for me, I'll speak to what I did as a youth. I was never quiet about it. I was just kind of like, you know what? Like, the world that I live in my own head is already so hard. The best I can do for myself is to continue fighting to reach out. And if there's ever a need for resources with, advocating, I would say that there are a lot of pages online, such as the like NAMI, and there's even pages like, oh, what is it? There's one even specific to Asian Americans that I've relied on to help us to communicate to older generations, like, hey, this is actually what depression is. This is how it might have shown up in the past for other people. And so just kind of finding ways to relate our experiences to theirs can be so powerful.
So how do you think that, so I know that you mentioned like how to build safe spaces in mental health. So how should we kind of go from building the safe spaces to actually like healing spaces, like as a community? How do you think we should come together as a community and use our experiences to heal with each other?
That's a beautiful question. Moving from a safe space to a healing space. Well, for me, the difference is a safe space is just non-judgmental. So you can just show up, no one's going to judge. Healing space is finding that humanness in each other and lifting each other up. So, how do I explain this? So, to me, a healing space has been people sharing experiences that they've both gone through and being like, hey, you're not the only one. And also, I will be standing right beside you while this is happening. So, knowing that people are being guided through situations without needing to deal with it alone, like, I think the emphasis is on community. That's going to be a huge piece. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did.
I
No, it
did?
really like that
Okay.
really answered my question. Thank you for that. And
Okay.
like to go to a smaller scale. So how do you think that, what are just some like small everyday things that you can do to help someone, like whether they're a teenager, like another teenager, youth, or your parent or your teacher, like what are just a few things that someone can do on a small scale to reduce stigma in their community?
I think, at least for me, what I've been doing is modeling conversations around emotions. I think that can be very powerful because the language that we use around things can do so much. So, for example, like when people ask, how are you? Be honest. That's what I do. I'm like, when people, like sometimes, it might. I know it's common courtesy to just be like, oh, good, how are you? But sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm actually really sad today, but I'm here, And sometimes people will find strength in knowing that you can just kind of acknowledge what's happening for you in your everyday life. We don't always have to put on a brave face. So that's a small thing that we can do.
Yeah, that sounds great. Like not always kind of masking our feelings,
Yes.
stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then to end it off on like a really light note, if anything were possible, like what's a vision that you have for the future of BIPOC, mental health, and other marginalized communities? What would you love to see?
I would love to see more affordable mental health care, first of all. It's so rough. First of all, there's not a lot of resources that cater specifically to us, and I think we are growing, so that is great. But also, as a general thing, I would hope that conversations can be had more easily around mental health, whether it's like positive things like self-care. Because sometimes we don't even talk about self-care that much. It's like, did you know that cooking is a self-care thing, but people don't even mention it too often. But or the things that might feel a little heavier, like anxiety or trauma. I think that we are starting to move towards a world where people can talk about that a lot more openly than, let's say, like 10 years ago. So I'm hopeful because we're making progress, and at the same time, it would be great to have that come to fruition soon.
That's amazing. I would love to see that as well. And Christine, thank you so much for being here today, sharing your story and the work you do and your amazing advocacy. Your commitment to healing advocacy is really inspiring, and I hope people will be inspired by your story. And if anyone would like to connect with Christine or look at the pages that she's mentioned, such as Wraparound Services and also the Asian American Instagram pages, I'll make sure to link them in the description. But don't forget to follow and stay tuned for future episodes. Until next time, this is Aditi reminding you to take care of your mind and keep calm and mental health on.
Thank you, DT.